Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, that's what keeps you coming back. Visit jackandrea.com for more information. Support for WGTD comes from Lemon Street Gallery. The Pline Air Painting class will be held Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays for 3 weeks starting July 10th from 1 to 3 p.m. for children 7 to 12 years old. Students will meet at Lemon Street but paint in Union Park. Call 605-4745.
I'm Steve Brown inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, June the 16th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast of The Enigma Covenant, a World War II spy thriller set in London in 1942. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan. The Enigma Covenant, a World War II spy thriller, Saturday morning, June the 16th at 11:15, here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and my guest today is the Kenosha County Executive, Jim Kruiser. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. It is a beautiful day in Kenosha County.
Every day is. And we have some very interesting news that came out on Thursday that we're reacting to on Thursday. This is pre-recorded. They're going to be widening I-94 all throughout the Kenosha County area. You want to tell us a little bit about how important that's going to be and how it looks to you and what the traffic situation is going to be?
Well, as you know, for a number of years, the I-94 corridor was worked on and not completed in Kenosha County, stopping right about at the Mars Cheese Castle, which happens to have the best Reuben sandwich in Kenosha County with the hot German potato salad.
I go for that.
And our local delegation and our mayor, myself, have always been pushing to get that completed to our county line. And and our partners, the Racine County, wanted to get it through their county, as did Speaker Voss and County Executive Delagrave. And finally, with the announcement of that small manufacturing operation, mom and pop shop called Foxconn up in Racine, the state has now made it a priority. And construction will be, we had the option of a 2 or 3 year program. We pushed for the 2 year accelerated program just to get the orange barrels off the road sooner. And it's going to cause some consternation with drivers. However, the 4-lane roads will be done and future repairs will be able to be done easier because of the ability to move more traffic on the off lanes. So the good news is 24 months, it'll be done. And how far north they get done in 24 months, I'm sure they're going to get quite a bit through Racine because some of those lanes are already 4 lanes. So traversing through here will be at a much better pace than it has been recently.
Now, this is really as a direct result of the Foxconn locating in the in Racine County, isn't it?
Definite cause and effect of that. That was part of the deal that Foxconn required, that transportation infrastructure between the airport and here get completed so they didn't have interruption with materials.
Now, some of the frontage roads are still closed. I tried to go to a meeting at Apple Holler, but I was there too early in the morning for breakfast. They were still on winter hours, but the road was closed still just a few days ago. When those frontage roads open up, will you think that they're going to be maintained as open and ways to avoid some of the holdup on I-94, or is most of the traffic going to be devoted either to 45 or to 31? What's the plan? Do we know yet?
They're going to try to keep 2 lanes rolling on north and south on I-94 as much as possible. Now, if there's an accident, obviously, and they need to divert traffic and things like that happen, there'll be diversions, and 31 or 45 are the likely ones. The frontage roads hopefully will be done in due time to allow the normal bypass of an accident on I-94. But when you have tight lanes, it could cause quite a backup, and you know, a broader detour is needed. So stay tuned, KenoshaCounty.org on the highway site and the public works site. We try to have as many updates as we can of local roads. If something significant in I-94 happens, we try to keep that on there. Also, the Wisconsin DOT website has that as well. And if the weather's very fine, they'll be working long hours to get that road done as quick as they can. So if you have a chance, give those guys a break, slow down a few miles an hour, and be careful of those highway workers. They're just trying to make a better road for all of us.
Highways S-142 and KR are a big part of what's been going on in our area. You want to, while we're talking about roads, County Exec Cruiser, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you know about the status of S and KR?
Sure. County Trunk KR was Kenosha County's jurisdiction from I-94 pretty much east to almost 31, and they needed our jurisdiction, our signature on a jurisdictional transfer, which was about 3 pages long when they first handed it to me, and it ended up being about 20 pages with attachments by the time we got done. The original plans were to go seven or eight lanes from I-94 and then stop at EA and come down to 2 lanes, one in each direction. The end game is to make this a faster alternate to get to I-94 from downtown Racine, Kenosha, and to speed that traffic up. The state is now making that a robust $30 to $40 million road. Again, minimum 4-lane all the way to Old Green Bay Road. And east of Old Green Bay Road, the counties are discussing of how to make that possibly add a lane, a twiddle lane, or keep it at 2-lane. We're going to be investigating that so that we can move people, move traffic, commerce, emergency vehicles as they move along. But there'll be 2 overpasses over the railroad tracks on the KR west of Green Bay Road, and there'll be a bike path all the way from the Western Frontage Road all the way to Old Green Bay Road, and or a multi-use path rather, and it's going to be also have timed lighting. It's going to have fiber wiring so that we can time the stop and go lights eventually from Sheridan Road all the way to I-94 so that you could cut probably 14 to 16 minutes off your drive time, which is a big deal if you're getting in and out of town and that's the only stop you want to make. So the state has stepped to the table. Governor Walker got involved in those discussions, and I said, finally, let's do it right or let's not do it. And they're doing it right. They did it right at Wiss Park. They went all the way to 31. If there was pressure to the east, they would continue on 165 east. They're going all the way to Old Green Bay Road here. I think it's the wisest for our community, and the state's picking up the tab. We're picking up a couple million dollars to change some roads around and pick some right away up, but the main road is EA, what doesn't meet 90th Street of Racine County. There's a jog there. If you're going to have a major arterial, you want to straighten those roads out. Likewise, on Wood Road in Kenosha, where it meets KR, Racine County is going to adjust that 30th Avenue. I don't know what it's called in Racine County. It might be Wood Road. And have that align with our 30th Avenue. Again, it's a safety issue, more traffic. Make the conditions as safe as you can and do it right off the bat.
Well, those will be 2 major intersection closures for a time, I would imagine. Maybe they'll end up being a roundabout or something.
I don't think there's any roundabouts in the program for that right now. And I don't know that we're going to have a stop-and-go light, signalized light at 30th Avenue. But we definitely are at a number of those sites west of 31.
The big picture, though, is that we're going to have east-west routes now that are you can get out of town. 165 has been a blessing. I never did quite understand why it was done so many multiple times in the last dozen years, but it's finally done, and the KR has been just a problem forever. And with the overpasses over the tracks, that should make quite a difference. And and take a lot of stress off Highway 50. But Highway 50, 75th Street for much of its route, that's in for some changes too. Do you want to put that in context with the rest of this for us, Jim?
Sure. This was obviously under the current state transportation budget. It's to start in 2019 late, run through 20 and 21, possibly end early in 22, for six lanes on Highway 50 from 43rd Avenue out to I-94 West Frontage Road. So that will expand capacity and improve traffic flow on Highway 50. You have KR, you have 165, you have 50. 158 is slated to be done several years after that into Green Bay Road from I-94. That's 52nd Street. And then while this is going on, we're still working with the FAA, and hopefully in the near several weeks they will respond positively to a concurrent use plan so we can readjust the intersection of H and County Trunk S so that we can start construction. And we can't start construction with the federal funds until we get that approval. And then we'll go four lanes from basically Green Bay Road and Washington Road all the way out to H, and then from H out to I-94.
So the future looks bright, but as the mayor pointed out when he was on the program with me a while ago this year, that there's going to be a lot of construction going on simultaneously, some of which is totally out of your control and his control in terms of the timing.
Embrace it.
What do you think it's going to happen? County Executive Cruiser, what's your advice to the rest of us? And to yourself?
Again,
what are you going to
give the highway workers a break. They're doing their job. The infrastructure is something we sorely needed, and the transportation dollars have been shrinking in Wisconsin, and while we can get those state dollars to improve our local infrastructure, we should take them off the table and use them locally. And it upgrades our business climate and our citizens traversing and the safety vehicles that have to go back and forth through traffic to go on their emergency runs. So overall, it's a positive. I work with the mayor closely. We look at traffic patterns. We specifically look at traffic patterns with the fire department so that if an underpass is closed, we know the alternate route so that the ambulance services know that. So we try not to have delays to people who have to go to an emergency room in the event something happens.
So there's going to be a period where it's going to be a problem getting around. Plan for an extra 10 minutes. Keep your eyes on the radio, on the websites of the county, and keep reading the newspaper and looking at the maps that they'll publish that you can pin up on your refrigerator, and we'll have to just make the best of it. But I think that you're in the right track when you say that grab the money when you can and invest it in our infrastructure while it's available, because we don't have this opportunity often.
And another way to drive safely is to tune in to WGTD
91.1.
And classical music is a very relaxing type of music. So if your blood pressure gets up, tune right in.
I think that's a great idea. Now, you mentioned bike paths, and I know that bike paths and multi-use paths for, like, bikes, people, and whatever else, joggers. Tell me more about the bike paths. I had an interesting conversation this past week with a woman who asked me, you know, why don't they have wayfinding signs? We've got all these bike trails connected to each other now, and wouldn't it be nice if you had come to an intersection and you could say, well, 2 miles to the lakefront or 4 miles to Carthage, and which way is which, so I don't have to carry a map on my lap while I'm bicycling. We're on our way to that, actually, aren't we? Tell us about that.
3 years ago, we applied for some grant to, in fact, give us wayfinding signs and for our countywide bicycle path plan. We did not get the grant. 2 years ago, we applied again, made it a little bit more robust, and we received those funds, and we are in development now with municipalities, and not only to put what municipality you're in, but some QR codes or whatever is the most appropriate symbol at that time when we get done since technology is changing so much. So you can click on and find out where's the closest bicycle repair place, a restroom, restaurant, coffee shop, Lake Michigan, a beach. How do you get to Pets Park from here? And a lot of our phones now can do that anyway, but with a quick click, a lot of these things will be taken care of. And we've had some very generous people sponsor already some of the nice maps that you'll see in along the way. There was one donated now at Pets Park right across from the cross-country course. Kind of, you are here, here's where you're going. And in addition to that, coming in the future, in the very near future, Len, in the next 2 weeks, within then, we will have the ribbon cutting for the expansion from Pets Park down Green Bay Road from County Trunk A all the way to KR along Green Bay Road, through the woods, over the bridge, along the road, and then it will cross over at Green Bay Road going west on KR and go all the way to 56th Avenue. And that route will be completely open. And Mount Pleasant this year will be building their route from KR going north on the west side of the Pike River, and it will hook up with their entire Mount Pleasant and Racine bike system and actually loop back through the North Shore bike trail that now exists.
That's a tremendous development. That's going to add miles and miles and lots of opportunities for fun and some racing and competition, yeah. I'll bet, too.
Well, it'll open it up to a lot of neighborhoods to have a safe haven of biking, and you'll have now a large loop to bike around so you don't have to go somewhere and then back. And it's all about connecting things and looping them so that people have an enjoyable ride and a safe riding experience. Sometimes people go on the road. Off of these off-road trails. Just keep your eye on them. Those people are having fun, enjoying themselves, or maybe going to work. Some are more and more people, actually, are using their bike for work in the summer. So, again, give your highway workers a break and also keep an extra eye out for those on bikes and motorcycles.
This is Community Matters, and I'm Len Iaquinta, and my guest today is our county executive, Jim Kruiser. Jim, Foxconn, let's go back to Foxconn for a minute. You know, that's perennially in the news now, almost on a daily basis. It seems more and more clear that the people who were in favor of Foxconn coming to southeastern Wisconsin were right, and the people in Kenosha and Kenosha County who would just have see it, who were happy to see it go to Sturtevant, were also right. There's a host of problems that you and the mayor are not having. How does it look to you now? It's been quite a while since the two of us have sat down and talked about Foxconn. What do you see in Foxconn in terms of the pros, the cons, and how our communities need to adapt? I think that it's clear we've done a wonderful job of talking about roads and planning for roads. I'm not worried about roads. I think the water will work itself out, and I'm not worried about water so much. I worry about the ecosystem that's around it. I worry about the human services that are going to be required with this expansion of people and the issues that that will inevitably bring to our agencies, which are already strapped. I'm concerned about the educational needs for the community now and in the future with this. I think that a lot of good work is being done about training. I wonder about other things that are going to fit in, and particularly related to the cultural aspect of the cultural change that's going to come as a result of this expansion. And that cultural change is going to have its own myriad facets, I feel. So I'd like to get a little bit deeper into this. You're a thoughtful man, and I know these things are not foreign to your thinking. Let's talk about them a little bit. What's top of mind with you in terms of what's next for us to watch for in Foxconn? Let's start there.
So, as for those who don't know, the mayor and I testified before the legislature and provided many amendments that would make this a win-win for Kenosha. And yes, they would have cost the state more money, but it would have been done right. And if it's not done right, we didn't want it in Kenosha County. So we concurrently said, we'll pass. We'll let Racine take it. It seemed to have the legislative force to go there anyway. And our job was then to make sure that we make sure our county is in a good position for when it happens, because the momentum behind that train was significant. So the first thing that had to happen was the issue of KR, of which I would not relinquish jurisdiction until we had the state pay for the road, do it right, get the infrastructure, commit the dollars, and have a firm time frame to get it done. And at that point, they also had to pave our roads that they're going to use as the bypass, and then they're going to give us a check for $7.5 million to rebuild those roads once KR opens again. So Kenosha County taxpayers were protected by this happening.
And that's significant.
I thought it was a very significant.
Otherwise, where would that money have to come from? It would have had to come from taxes.
Absolutely.
Or bonds, right?
Absolutely. So they not only paved it before the project, they're going to pay for the total reconstruction afterwards. The other issue before we accepted that is we worked into that agreement, which is very unusual, was water issues. People were concerned about the water. The quality of the water issues, I think Ed St. Peter has done a marvelous job at the head of the water department in Kenosha. And he is not concerned on how they will be technically treated there. I think the only water issue that people have a concern about is how much water goes out and that volume. And that debate can go on. But the cleanliness of the water, I think, has been addressed. And I trust Ed St. Peter on that. The diversion issue, I brought in SewerPAC, Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, who has done extensive studies on the flow rate of the floodplain of the Des Plaines River. So we have the data, and they've done the calculations. And I believe in the next week they're going to come out with the calculations. And my requirement was to ask Foxconn and Mount Pleasant to give them the data and let them run the numbers. They have done that. And the DOT numbers, because the DOT also has runoff in the roads that they're doing. And as a matter of fact, on KR, all the road, there's only one lane in KR that's going to be in Kenosha County. The rest of the lanes are going to be in Racine County. And in fact, the gutters are going to catch the rain off of the water and shoot it back north and then come through the same size culvert at the same rate that it was before. Now, if you were to have a 25-year rainfall, and it would normally take 4 hours to flow through that pipe. If you have a 25-year rain now, maybe it's going to take 5.5 hours. But the floodplain itself, the footprint of the floodplain, won't increase. So the rate stays the same. The length of time will get longer. And that's a normal development practice that's been going on in Wisconsin for a while. Now, the Des Plaines, I think you're going to hear that report in the next, I say, week to 10 days, I would say. The Pike River, we don't have as much data, but we have significant data. But having a third party like Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission look at this is that we get data, we get an analysis, and everybody doesn't get lawsuit happy, which nobody wins. We all lose money as taxpayers. We don't want to sue each other. We're going to get a resolve on this, on the South Pike River, the South branch of the river, and the Pike River, of where those watersheds go and what is the rate. Again, it's the size of the culvert, it's the rate of the water, and they need the capacity, which is going to be a lot of capacity in Racine. Some say close to the size of Paddock Lake. When you put all the retention ponds together to hold back that water and have it release at a rate that doesn't increase the floodplain of the Pike River watershed. So those things are going on, and I'm very excited about that, because rarely in a jurisdictional transfer do you get the opportunity to include those, especially when you're downwater from somebody. So I think that is a key point that hasn't been talked about until it rains. And the issue is, once you have your baseline, and let's just say the numbers go over, well, then there's a corrective action plan that needs to take place to rectify that. So the next time you have a 10-year rain, a 25-year rain, you know, you can adjust for that and try to keep it at the same, keep the floodplain in the same footprint. If it's a 100-year rain, like we've had three in the past 2 years, there's not a lot of any model can do. people are going to get wet. Ditches are going to be full. It's going to run over the road. Those are phenomenons that nature provides, and we need to work through it.
Did I hear you suggest that there's going to be a new recreational lake somewhere as a result of this?
They may have many different types of detention retention ponds of different sizes, but if you were to add all the water and the volume together, it would be about Paddock Lake.
I see. All right, I was going getting all excited.
Yeah, I know you wanted to go sailing.
I was feeling like another Lake Andrea or something.
There you go.
Was coming.
So when you put all that together, and the final point I want to make is, oddly enough, this place, this community, the Kenosha Racine community, have been manufacturing meccas for years. My dad worked at Dynamatic and McWhite for a number of years, and my uncle worked at Anaconda Brass, and all these places have gone by the wayside. You don't hear the drop, forge, or snap on anymore. It's the home office, and we're blessed to have the world headquarters here. But the manufacturing isn't done here. And now we have a chance to have manufacturing jobs for the next generation, living wage jobs for the next generation. I would just caution people who have already made their living not allowing the next generation to have their opportunity to work at a living wage job. And one that I just ran into someone the other day who graduated from this very facility at Gateway and got offered a job at Foxconn and is very excited. So there's a lot of stories about this and that. I'm going to watch and see. I want to see the wages they're paying. I want to make sure they're validated. And if they don't do what they said they were going to do, I'll be the first one to say, shame on you. But the cards are dealt. It's going on. The best we can do in Racine, and we're going to get a lot of spinoff, by the way, and a lot of our jobs that we're going to create in Kenosha off of this, many are not going to be in TIFs. In other words, they're going to expand our tax base immediately.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What do you? I know it's very difficult for economists who have all the training in the world to predict what's going to happen in this situation, but I'm sure there have been some models developed, and you've got a tremendous amount of experience yourself, County Exec Cruiser. Where should we look for economic development? What kinds of further economic development do you see happening in Kenosha County?
I think you're going to find a lot of the supply chain locate in this area, and it's going to go throughout the state. I mean, they're trying to make sure all of the state benefits from this, but we're in the sweet spot. I think the Village of Summers, the part of Summers or Paris that is in the Summers Agreement, those are hot areas that they could be a little more selective now. There's going to be high pressure for development there.
So,
and we're talking manufacturing for a lot of these.
So is there support for that? How well positioned are we in Kenosha County with business parks to support that and the infrastructure? Give us the whole picture.
We are actually, when we went out to our rating at Standard & Poor's and Fitch's, they said we're in the third inning of development, especially in lieu of the recent Summers Paris City deal. We have thousands of acres of developable industrial land. And we're not just talking logistics. We're not just talking trucking, which is an important part. Trucking is important because how else do you get it from one place to another without trucking? But manufacturing, Wisconsin is still one or two per capita in manufacturing. We have been for years. People think we've fallen off the charts. It's Wisconsin and Indiana that go back and forth all the time. We are in a great place for capacity in Summers. The city still has some footprints. Pleasant Prairie has some footprints. Summers, again, at First Industrial does. And we're hitting a different profile when Cava and the county teamed up with Salem Lakes. Vonco is now out there being very successful in Salem Industrial Park, and they have capacity that I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 or 6 years they were almost full. And looking at another one. Now, Salem Lakes, that's 12,000 people in that village. That's a big village. It was one of the biggest towns when they became a village. So you're going to have pressure in Twin Lakes. They've got a TIF that's coming back. So I think that there's great opportunity. I think you're going to see Bristol. That corridor on the western part of I-94 where Pleasant Prairie, Haribo, Aurora's in, a couple more companies looking there. I think you're going to find that rim work out very well for not just logistical, but manufacturing or other professional jobs, which is one of the areas the rating company really wants us to work on is higher paying jobs. With this type of manufacturing development, like Kenall Manufacturing, has been a tremendous boon. Good jobs, good wages, and they're solid corporate citizens. They've been linked with Gateway and the training program, as is Snap-on, just making the training of some of our young people do things that were you couldn't even dream about when I went into college. There are great opportunities in the technical colleges where you can make good money and really enjoy your work. So I think the future is very bright for a lot of our young people. I will say that the county executive and mayor of Racine and the village trustees of Mount Pleasant are going to have a little bit more stressful couple years. There's going to be tremendous growing pains in Racine. They're going to have a TIF that's going to be on for 30 years, and when you take that big of a footprint out of a village, their taxes are going to go a bit higher without any movement of anything.
What's going to happen to the taxes in Kenosha County?
Well,
the county executive has his crystal ball out. We're seeing lots of development all over. It makes a lot of sense to me. That will require some infrastructure development in some ways by one partner or another. What would be the balance then? Let's say 10 years hence, what would that do to the tax structure of the county?
So let's look at our present situation. We have the lowest unemployment rate in 19 years. That's wonderful. We have income rising, always good for a community. We have crime declining. Let me say that. We have crime declining in Kenosha, and especially juvenile crime in the summer declining. We have 8,000 new jobs created, $1 billion in capital investment made over the last 8 years. Think about where we were in 2008. Wow.
It was a very bad place.
2008, the mayor and I put in County Trunk N. And I'm not going to say it's all because of me, but if you put infrastructure in, good things happen. From 142, County Trunk N for Gordon Foods. We flew down to Shelbyville, and Gordon Foods is a great corporate citizen and has given a lot to our food pantries and other organizations.
And they've been terrific.
And we knew we could open up 3 or 4 other lots for future development by putting in that infrastructure. The county built the road, gave it to the city. Who would have thought, Len? Who would have thought Amazon would have picked that site? And you know why? It was shovel ready. They had to pick up a couple parcels, but they had the means to do it. And then Uline, which has been a great corporate citizen in Pleasant Prairie, expanded there across from them. And they're putting another building on that site, which will hold more than 2, by the way. They're going to replicate the building that they just put up, let alone they doubled their campus in Pleasant Prairie. And Uline has never used any TIF dollars. They're right on the tax roll. When you get companies like that, and we have many of them who haven't taken a dime of help, maybe they got some retraining money, but they're putting people to work, they're paying taxes, and being good corporate citizens. The future of Kenosha, Wisconsin is bright. We have there's some growth that's going on. There's in county government, we've had our tax rate for the last 10 years has been the lowest in the last 25. We had a zero tax rate, a couple of ones. We were very low. But we need to reinvest in our infrastructure. The city, we need to take care of some of the areas that
where is that needed?
you know, for instance, you know, the healthcare industry has changed, and Accenture took over St. Luke's and reduced the number of medium locked rooms for mental health chapters, Chapter 51, Chapter 59, that the county pays for if they're court ordered, if someone's a danger to themselves or someone else. And if we had somebody who could use outpatient, but the beds were filled here at the care center, we would have had to send them the more expensive place to be. We worked at the city and the care center, and they've expanded the number of people they can help. It's been a smashing success. Crisis interventions working with them. People don't have to go to the emergency room. They aren't getting arrested. It stops the revolving door. And a number of people who just need to get their meds adjusted or get back on track for 3 or 4 days. 800 people go through the care center. You know who they are? They're your neighbors, your friends, and people you know.
Cross-section.
It's across all economic lines, and they get straightened out. They come back home. It's an outplacement. You can walk out. You're only there if you want to help yourself. You have highly specialized people. Get them back on track and get people back to their normal lives. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength when you go for that kind of help. And your loved ones, they get their questions answered by professionals. So then the family unit can help people go on with their productive lives and do the things they're doing.
The takeover of local hospitals by large corporations that are governed from by out of town and people who may have never even heard of Kenosha, does that concern you at all? There's no question, but consolidation is going to happen in the healthcare industry everywhere, including in Kenosha. Are there concerns, though, that you worry about in terms of services being available to the community that may not be profitable? And some of these corporations are not-for-profit. Some of them are for-profit. The ones that are not-for-profit ought to be doing a certain amount of charitable care. Do you foresee problems ahead with this sort of nationalization of the healthcare chain?
I think the consolidation of healthcare systems is going on. It's going on in healthcare records. It's going on in healthcare itself. We've been keeping the dialogue up with the local hospitals, even through the most recent two mergers, and we're keeping them apprised. They've both given us input. Aurora gave us $250,000 for telepsychiatry to bring down our wait list for people who needed some mental health advice. It's really been, you know, kind of a good, peaceful coexistence. Could we use more help? Yes, we could. But we're all evolving in this, and we're going one step at a time on a methodical plan to strengthen the issue of a couple things. One is the prevention of opioid abuse. Two is to make sure that we have a place for recovery for people on opioids, which has, again, hit a cross-section across our whole community. And we're going to continue to be working on that. Alcohol and drug addiction, we've started a number of programs with Vivitrol, which has gotten people off opioids and alcohol when they're released from jail to stop the revolving door there. And kudos to Sheriff Dave Beth for moving forward on that and working hand-in-hand with us to accelerate that program. Been very successful on people who want to be a recovered person. These are people who have to want to do it. You can't make people do that. But if we have those programs and avenues open for people who want to get help, we are doing those things that are cost-effective to do that and get them back and working with the Shalom Center. We have people now who have jobs, have an apartment, and going back and volunteering at the Shalom Center because that's what gave them a chance.
They're doing a great job. But there's an affordable housing issue that's becoming prominent nationally. In fact, the recent issue of The Nation magazine published up in Madison has their cover story about affordable housing. I'd like to get your take on affordable housing. We've talked about homelessness on this program in the past. Homelessness is highly related to living wage and affordable housing. Those are sort of sine qua nons in when you're getting into this topic. There's lots of housing going up, and more is going to be needed. What about affordable housing? What about the couple working three part-time jobs each, have two kids, and they're desperately trying to make ends meet, and they find that living is going to cost them 60% of their annual income? That's not sustainable. What's your take on the affordable housing problem in our area?
I think a lot of the affordable housing issues, everybody can't live on their own. I lived at home and went to school. That was my only option to go to college. And I'm blessed. My parents were terrific. Gave me that opportunity to go to Parkside. Without Parkside, I wouldn't have had an opportunity for higher education. So if you don't have a family unit or some relatives you can lean on, I think a lot of people got in the trick box with the housing market and were approved for loans they shouldn't have been able to be approved for, got their dream, and then everything went upside down, and they start using the inflation of their home as a spending account instead of a savings account. And we don't have to relive the history on that, but we are not going to fix the housing development here. But I will tell you, when land prices increase, you are not going to see housing developments occur until the price per square foot makes sense for the builder. And I think the prices have shot up a bit where it's going to be a while before we get to that point. There's going to be a different density request in the future. I predict this, a different density request by developers based on the land value, because it comes down to the per square foot of what you build and how much land you get.
They're not in the philanthropy business, most of them. In fact,
no.
Any of them that I know.
You just look for the price of an average ranch home in Kenosha, Wisconsin with three bedrooms. You know, some of those are going for $250,000 now. You just go, what? What? it's interesting to look in the newspaper. It's all over the boards, though. Because people who have to buy are buying, and those who, you know, it's all over the boards. But with the low income housing issue is one that will take city government, city housing department, and the rest of the government leaders to kind of look at. But again, it has to be driven by desire and people, where people are.
And we'll take work on the state and federal levels as well, I suspect.
Many things will happen at the local level before the state and federal get done.
Let's hope so. Let's close on a hopeful note of having a good time in the parks this for the rest of this weekend and for the rest of the summer. We've got some good summer days coming up. What's exciting at the beer garden out at Pets, Jim?
Every day of the week. It's a fun time out there. They've got... you can go online on the Parks Department or on the Beer Garden website or Facebook page. it's always a nice time. Whenever I go there, I see a different group of people, different people I haven't seen in a long time. It's just a nice, enjoyable time to relax.
Lines aren't as long right now. I understand that.
No.
It's smoothed out, and you've got the number of servers you need on hand with the experience you've had. And there's a lot of special events all throughout the summer, aren't there?
Almost every day there's something going on in the parks, and it's really enjoyable. People are really have – it's been quite successful last year, and it's going to continue on this year. Something that just recently got approved by committee and is going to the county board in the next week or two is Boundless Adventures. It's up – under the canopy, and you'll be able to have high adventure in 2019 at Bristol Woods, potentially if the county board approves it, kind of an athletic course up in the trees for all different skill levels. It'll be a great thing and a diamond for Kenosha County.
That sounds terrific. I thank my guest, County Executive Jim Kruiser, the county executive here in Kenosha County, and a frequent contributor to Community Matters. This is Len Iquinta for Community Matters, wishing you a good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Parkside hosts an interpersonal workplace communication online training for professionals looking